Instagram. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And Wednesday, Bernard Starr, good friend, long time ago. Bernie, who has a way of the responsibility, actually, of professionally looking at this world and keeping it somewhat in order by presenting things. Bernie, I hear you and your posse.
My posse.
Your posse has put together a survival kit here. We're working desperately to help people get through this tremendous anxiety, right?
Yes, well, we want to make our contribution. As you know, I'm president of the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy, and we thought that we should make some contribution here to addressing fear, anxiety, present some solutions in these uncertain times. Because, as you know, Armand, the confidence in almost everything is just way down. There's massive job cuts, 2.5 million of them maybe over the last year. Household anxiety is just rampant, running away out of control.
What does household anxiety mean?
Well, people in families frightened about their status and what's going on.
Just, it's basically the whole level of anxiety in a household.
Yes.
It's like my house feels nervous.
As if the, right? As your foundation is about to collapse. And people are just frightened and worried about almost everything, and that tends to feed on itself.
The biggest worry, and of course what we're talking about is a conference that Bernie has pulled together, which is going to be a group of some of the best psychologists in America that I know of, are giving this lecture on March 1st. You could find out information about that from my website. But this is going to be on March 1st, and they're talking about anxiety in this day and age. Now, the thing we want to address today is one of the biggest problems that are facing people, and you hear about it all day. It's about job loss. Job loss, and what does it mean to lose your job? You know, losing your job threatens to throw a person into a regression, into a kind of a feeling of, it's like a complete disaster. There are a number of feelings that people go through when they lose their job. And by lose your job, I mean suddenly to be told, you know, sorry, we got to get rid of you. There's no place for you. Bankers, brokers, you know, you would think it's almost a joke at this point. But there are so many young people in New York who have taken apartments, bought apartments, not only just rented apartments, bought apartments, made commitments on things based on the fact that there was a lucrative job market here. And the jobs are beginning to melt around the world, and it's starting to trickle into New York now. So there's job loss. So our question today, and the thing we're going to approach, is not only for you, my friends, but for people you know, who will probably be one of the people who are going to suffer from having this happen to them. How do you deal with people who lose their jobs? What if you lose a job? What are the emotions you can anticipate? How do we deal with it? That's what Bernie and I are going to be dealing with today. So, Bernie, let's start at the beginning. When a person loses their job, what's one of the emotions that they go through? What is one of the first thing that happens as a reaction?
Shock.
Shock. Shock meaning like how did this happen to me?
Disbelief, how could this happen to me? Especially because of what you just said, that we've had so much confidence for a long period of time that people thought, well, even if I lost my job, there's another one right around the corner. And now people have doubts, and they're really shocked, and it's one of the biggest threats to the self, to their sense of who they are.
Well, you know, Bernie, I may disagree. I may disagree because I don't know if it's so shocking. I think at this point, just about anybody who lost their job would say, oh boy, me too. But almost everybody's gearing up for it. Almost everybody, you know, except independent practitioners and people, but you know, people who are working for other people and they see the companies doing badly, they're more prepared. Now, the shock may not be the kind of shock that would be, you know, suddenly you're fired and you don't expect it.
Yes, but still there's shock there because, as we well know, that denial is always present, that denial is a very powerful antidote or an attempted antidote for shock.
How does that play in? How does denial play in?
It's not going to happen to me. You know, I've been performing well. I'm important for this company. They can't fire me.
Okay, so denial makes you vulnerable to that kind of shock experience.
Yes, then it may even be more shocking because of the denial.
Yes, I see. Other feelings that you have a lot of other things you go through. Anger. You know, if you think about anger, anger is a normal response to someone who is determining your fate in a negative way. If somebody steps on your toe, you got a right to get angry. If somebody pushes you, you have a right to get angry. Now, anger is the response. It doesn't mean you have to push them back. But anger is an animal's natural response to invasion of their own timing, their own thing. So one of the responses is anger when somebody, when you suddenly lose your job.
Yes, it's
natural.
It's a primary defense.
A primary defense. The trouble with anger is, as we know, what we call burning your bridges, right? Which many people do. And here's what we're talking about today, my friends. This is Armand DeMille, Dr. Bernard Starr. We're talking about jobs, losing your jobs, dealing with people who lose their jobs, loving people who lose their jobs, even just being with people. I mean, there's secondary stuff we're going to talk about, lending money to people, stuff like that.
Well, also, the fact that almost everybody in that situation is going to be facing powerful, strong emotions.
Which are the emotions? Anger, we talk about.
Anger, we talked about feelings about, they may get excited, overly excited. There may be guilt involved. There may be
guilt.
Feeling.
Wait, slow down.
Okay. That's a big one.
Can't just throw them at people.
True.
Let's talk about shame.
Guilt and shame.
Yeah. Because your self-image is tied, and many people's self-image is tied to their being a functional, valued being in the world. We're a kid, and when we're a little kid, you know, it's one of the things about being a little kid among the bigger kids. You feel a lot of shame. People say, hey, you twerp, you little thing, you're too small, you're too young. And so children, many young children, live with a certain sense of shame. And they say to themselves, I'm going to grow up, and I'm going to get big. And I'm going to be just as big as you are, and therefore I won't feel that shame anymore. Well, something happens when you get fired. You're reduced to being that little kid again. You can be in your own mind. So the shame that you feel is suddenly you have that feeling of being a non-valued human being. Now, I know people, I know doctors, who when their patients tell them, I'm not coming back to you anymore, they feel shame. I know lawyers who, when people quit them, I know psychotherapists, when people say, I'm not coming back, they get fired too, you know? They feel shame. Oh, what's the matter with me? Somebody found out I'm really not a big person after all. So shame is a very important part. It's an important thing. Now you also say guilt, because what happens
yes,
with guilt?
Yes, guilt is a little different, because guilt implies more of perhaps my personal responsibility. Maybe I did something to contribute to this, or maybe there's something I should have done that could have prevented this.
When you have a job, especially in today's economy, when you have a job and you're looking around and you're, you know, in a couple of years ago, if you had a job, you could be such a wise ass. If you were valued and you had a talent, you could walk in there dressed any way you want to dress, do be any way. Your boss said, well, that's a valuable employee because he puts the circuit board together. He does a, you know, he does this thing, a valuable employee. Let him do whatever he wants to do. But, you know, after a while, you get this sense of yourself, and you get so filled with yourself that you start being nasty, negative, gossiping, forming alliances, and you do things at work that many people now who are listening know that they're doing, that get people angry at you. And I could just give you one good example. If anybody at work thinks that they could talk badly about anybody else at work and not have that person know that you did it, forget it. It goes around real fast. It goes around so quick. So if you say to Charlie, you know, Tony, right, has weak knees, somehow Charlie one day is going to use it and say, you know, Armand said that Tony has, that you have weak knees. Somehow it's going to be used against you. So a lot of the temptation, a lot of the guilt that people feel is how they cause their own thing. Now, other things that people go through is a lot of people feel that it's their right to take things from their job. They steal things. I've had employees who I've seen stealing things, and I watch what happens to them. They take a little extra. They do a little thing, you know. They'll steal pens, pads. They'll take the pad home, figuring, well, it's only a pad. I've seen people take tissue home, you know, tissue boxes home because they didn't want to buy tissue boxes. But there's a kind of thing that people get into where you get a relationship with your job where it's kind of like, I'm going to take everything I can from you, and underneath it, you feel guilty. You know, it's like being a petty theft. If you're a petty theft and you go into a store that you've stolen from, if you've, you know, you've lifted something, shoplifted something, you feel bad when you go in the store. So there are people who go to work with a kind of guilt automatically there, and it sits in them, and it affects them. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. Maybe you should steal tissues. Maybe you should do all this. Maybe your boss does get too much and you get too little. Maybe you have every right to do it. But I'm just saying it does impact on you, and that you have to recognize that there's an impact on you, that the guilt that people may often feel is the guilt that says, I made this happen myself.
And then you may start reviewing all of that in your head when you finally get fired and find yourself unemployed.
It must feel the way I feel when I get a ticket from a policeman for speeding. You know, I've had a few in my life. I go like 65, 70 miles an hour, 75, 70 miles an hour in a 60-mile-an-hour zone. Cop pulls me over. You know what I feel? I feel like kind of a... It wasn't my fault. The dog did it. No, I feel a kind of a shame, a kind of a, like a thing appears. Oh, yeah, I've been getting away with this for a long time.
Is that shame or just regret that you got caught?
Well, it's both, you know, it's actually both. Because there's a part of me that wishes I never exceeded that speed limit. There's a part of me that says, you know, there's nothing wrong with going the speed limit. There's nothing wrong with going at 60 miles an hour. I don't need that extra 1 minute of my life. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. But, of course, I'm always asking myself questions. But here's what I have to say to you, and here's what Bernie and I have to say to you, and here's what the conference is going to say to you on March 1st, that there are tools that you have that you could use about your own mind and your own self that will help you get through an economic crisis, especially one that is based on losing a job. Okay, so other feelings that people get... Let's talk about anxiety. You know, anxiety is an interesting feeling. There's a little piece of the brain called the amygdala. The amygdala, it's such a cute place. Everybody should buy an extra one. You have an amygdala, and this amygdala has this firing of neurons. Now, here's what happens to people. If for any reason your body decides to have these neurotransmitters going off and your amygdala is suddenly very excited, the first thing you say to yourself is, I'm nervous, where's the danger? So people who are tend to be nervous are always making up problems. They're making up reasons why I'm nervous. The truth is, you get nervous first, and then you make up the reason, most of the time. People who lose their jobs get this firing of the amygdala. Why? Well, wouldn't any animal who is suddenly left out, alone, on a field with no protection after having had a job or having had a home, get nervous and look for danger?
You know, there's another aspect to this physiologically that I think is very interesting, and that is the autonomic nervous system. There's two parts to that. There's the sympathetic system that runs our bodies. It's on automatic. It runs your heart, your organs, et cetera. We talk about my heart and my this, but it really runs on its own. But then there's the parasympathetic nervous system, and that's the one that we react to fear with and flight. And it was very useful when we lived in dangerous environments. Okay, but the fact is that very early on, in our psychology, we attach a lot of our needs and wants to that parasympathetic nervous system so that we make everything in our lives a life and death struggle. And then we use it psychologically to jumpstart us into action. Like when we lose a job, we make it into a life and death issue. And I think it's important for us to make an effort, and maybe Armand will have some comments about that, of how we could deal with these overreactions so that we don't make all of our life and our psychology a life and death.
What a good point. Overreact. There's a word for you. Anxiety has a tendency to lead you to overreact. Of course, you lost your job. How could it be overreact? How could you be? You lost your money. You don't know if you're going to be able to keep your house. You have all these things in front of you. But overreact? Overreact is to react as if you're going to die. And I'll tell you something, friends, we're all powerhouses. We're all get through. If you have to sell one of your two cars, if you have to move from an apartment in Manhattan to an apartment in the Bronx, if you have to take your kids out of private school, if you have to use less food, if you have to eat like I did when I was a kid. You know, when I was a kid, I ate more peanut butter than any human on the face of the earth. I was so poor.
I hope you're not still eating it now.
I was just looking at the recall. When I was a kid and I was a jazz musician, we had no money, none. But I had a friend who was in the Army, and he brought us gallons of peanut butter, terrible peanut butter from the Army. And that's what we lived on. It was peanut butter all the time. But we lived on peanut butter, and we got through. Of course, now I have a peanut brain, but we did get through it. You know, there is a way to survive. Unemployment, another danger, another thing that happens to people when they're losing their job, and this is another thing very important, is it challenges the basis of the United States functioning, which is your image. We are an image culture. We are so much an image culture, so much more than other cultures. We care about how you look. Everything is about how you look. When you meet somebody you haven't seen in a week, what do you say? You look great. How do you look? That looks fine. Look, look, look. All about image.
And that image is very much tied to our jobs. I mean, you ask anybody, who are you? And somebody will say, well, I'm Bob. I'm a dentist, you know, or I'm a mechanic.
What do you do is a question, and that's your image. Now, the image-based culture, unemployment is almost like you don't exist. It's a funny thing. Unemployment is like somebody removed you from the telephone book, like you lost your wallet. You know, you ever have that experience? I had that experience, too. I remember once being lost somewhere where I had lost my wallet, and I couldn't identify myself to anybody. I couldn't pull out, who am I? Who are you? Let me tell you who I am. No. I didn't have any identity. So the idea that you have a damage to your identity and you don't have a way of identifying yourself because you have lost your job, and in fact, worse than lost your job, you have been fired. You have been found incidental, unnecessary, and invaluable. Here comes an invaluable one. Oh, here comes an incidental one. this works on the being. Now, this works on the being, especially if when you were a kid, you had a bad image of yourself. See? The frailty to losing your job and the thing that people go through when they are in this kind of crisis has a lot to do with the underpinnings of your personality. How strong are you? Where's your strength? What's the thing you've been hiding from?
It also, Armand, I think, shakes up your basic sense of trust in almost everything, because we all have this firm belief that my identity is secure, and once you're robbed of that identity, you begin to distrust everything. You distrust relationships, you distrust your worth, your ability to get reestablished again.
And so when you have somebody you love who falls into this predicament, your child, your lover, your mate, it's good for you to understand what to do to help them. Now, one of the natural things to do is reassurance. I'm not so sure how reassurance works. Reassurance is, the person says, I feel miserable, I can't get a job, oh, you'll get a job, oh, everything will be okay, oh, give you false reassurances. I think the most important thing you could do for a friend is to say to the friend, I know how terrible you feel, and just to sympathize with them, not to necessarily give them antidotes. Don't give them the words that everybody's going to say to them, number one. Number two, you have to look for certain signs, and there are signs that we all have. The looming most dangerous sign, which makes the most sense, is depression. Depress. Of course, you depress. You push down. Why do you get depressed when you lose a job? Because you're feeling rageful. You have nothing to do with your rage. You can't express it. And you feel you want to push down your feelings. Depression is not a state of feeling, even though everybody talks about feeling depressed. It's a state where you go numb. And you go numb on the inside, and there are signs of it. Disturbed sleep.
Right, loss of energy.
Loss of energy, for sure. Loss of interest. Loss of pleasure. You have a loss of kind of a loss in things that give you pleasure. Food changes. You eat too much, you eat too little. Or you can move towards things like drugs and alcohol. Now, it's such a tendency for somebody to say, so I'll smoke cigarettes now while I'm not.
And it also may, in general, make you prone to very risky behavior.
You would just throw
caution to the wind. You're kind of saying, this terrible thing happened to me, and now I just don't care about anything.
I think there's a reason for that, Bernie. I think part of what happens is when you're tossed in space, and you're kind of in this kind of middle zone, and you don't know who you are, you take a risky behavior because the result of it is you're going to feel something, either bad or great. So you gamble, for example. People play lottery. They go to the lotto, and they gamble, and they buy lotto tickets because they're either going to feel great for winning or feel bad for doing it. At least they'll feel something. A lot of other risky behaviors have to do with sexual behaviors. A lot of promiscuity, go out there, have relationships, do stuff. Who cares? Because you want to feel something.
Right, and you want to feel powerful, and those things may give you some sense of power, even though they may be destructive in the long run.
A lot of other things that happen is people feel like they lose track of their families. Your family becomes the enemy. Because your family represents the very thing you're supposed to supply. You're supposed to give them things. You're supposed to bring home the soy milk. That was better than bacon. You're supposed to be the provider. And your kids look at you and, did daddy get a job? What a feeling. What a feeling. Daddy's looking for a job. And then kids with each other kids, what does your father do? My father just got fired. Oh, my God, that's horrible stuff to put on you as an adult. So many adults feel themselves alienated from their children, and they withdraw. One of the things we want to look for as therapists, which Bernie and I are, is we want to look for your signs of depression and withdrawal, acting out and addictive behaviors, because we need that energy to keep you inspired. Now, what does the inspiration do for you? The word inspire means to breathe in. Inspire, to fill yourself. Inspire, you know? Perspire is to wet out. I just figured I'd say that anyway. But if you want to get clear in your mind. And to get clear in your mind, you can't make it further cloudy by all of these things that you do to yourself, chemical and addictions and behaviors. I think you had something to say about it, Bernie, about the part
well,
of
and
yourself.
Also,
yeah, go ahead.
We discussed this before, and also to become the warrior who you are.
The warrior. And the warrior instead of the worrier. Right? That's it. That's
beautiful,
it, Bernie.
Beautiful.
Absolutely. The warrior from the worrier. The warrior is the person who's amygdalic dominated, right? Meaning my brain is telling me get scared. The warrior is the one who says, I see my brain getting scared, but I'm not going to give in to it. I am going to fight. I'm going to get through this. I'm going to be okay with it. Now, what does fighting mean? What other elements are involved? Well, there are so many other things that begin to take place that we have noticed. And after our break, I want to talk about both the Madoff and the TARP syndrome, two new psychiatric syndromes that have come about.
You're an innovator.
I really am. Well, let me tell you exactly what I mean by it, you know. The TARP syndrome is, I'm in debt. I've spent too much money. I've got a lot of credit cards out there. I owe money to a lot of people. I don't want to declare bankruptcy because it's going to affect my ability to get myself in trouble later. Right? Because I'm not going to be able to borrow money later. So I'm fighting with the banks. And here's the TARP syndrome. I'm going to go to my mother and say, bail me out. Give me some money, Mom. And then with that money, I'm going to pay off some of the interest to the banks that I owe interest to, which is going to keep accumulating interest, but therefore I can keep using my credit cards to keep extending my debt, and I'll keep paying my mortgages. So your parents, your TARP syndrome, is getting your parents to bail you out in a way, like we know about the TARP, that doesn't bail anybody out. It just deepens the hole. And then once your parents do it, and they do it out of shame and guilt, it's almost like you're entitled to it. TARP me, Mommy. TARP me. Or you have a good friend, and your good friend has money, and you can't pay your mortgage, and you may lose your house. So you go to your good friend and you say, can you afford to give me enough money to pay this mortgage? Well, if you're going to do that, be sure that the mortgage is after that you're going to pay for, because if not, your friend TARPing you is going to make you a not too good citizen in the near future. That's going to make you lose one good friend, and it's going to cost your friend as well. There's a survivor's guilt that goes to people who have still maintained their jobs. They're holding on. They have a survivor's guilt. They still think, oh, my God, I still have my job and you don't have yours. I don't even want to talk about it. I know somebody who's a successful author. She talks about, you know, her book is being published and she's got a lot of, she's afraid to talk about it because so many people around her are struggling. So we got survivor's guilt, we got TARP syndrome, and we have Madoff syndrome. What's Madoff syndrome? Madoff syndrome is you have so much difficulty dealing with the shame of losing your job that you decide you're going to try to get people to invest in a new business with you. And you tell people, invest with me and I'll give you a percentage of the profit. And of course, you're out of a job. You have no experience starting businesses. Businesses are impossible to succeed, but you made off your buddies. You know, you made off with their money. Madoff syndrome is trying to get money from people to have them invest in you, in your business, so that potentially you'll share in the future. Well, we know how that works. And the TARP syndrome is where you're trying to get people to give you money to bail you out of trouble. We have just included, this is the DSM, Diagnostic and Statistic Manual, must do something with this. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about this more, and we'll be taking your calls as well. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Lloyd Price, and you're tuned to WBAI New York. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis,
here we go.
And of course your comments, questions, and observations.
Stand by. So
that's
five,
right here,
four,
WBAI,
three,
New York.
We may not have a cent to pay the rent, but we're gonna make it. I know we will. We may have to eat beans every day, but we're gonna make it. I know we will.
And if a job is hard to find, and we have to stand in the welfare line, I've got your love, and you know you've got mine.
So we're gonna make it. We're gonna make it, I know we will. We may have to fight hardships alone, but we're gonna make it, I know we will.
Our togetherness brings peace of mind. We can't stay down all the time. I've got your love and you know you've got mine.
So we're gonna make it. Our car may be old, our children's cold, but we're gonna make it, I know we will. We may not can spare a road to crumb, but we're gonna make it, I know we will.
And if I have to carry around a sign saying, get the deaf, the dumb, and the blind, I've got your love and you know you've got mine.
We're going to make it. Little Milton. Little Milton. Little Milton. We're going to make it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind with Dr. Bernard Starr. We are talking about the economy, and we're talking about some of the problems facing the economy. And we just started talking about, you know, things like the extensions of the difficulty with money. Now, I'm going to talk about this thing because money becomes a new tool. The people who have money left, and that could mean you have $500 in the bank and your brother has nothing, they will come to you and say, I need money. I met with a younger man today. He said to me, you know, he said, a friend of mine came to me and asked me for money. He said, I'm in debt. But that friend, when I asked him for money, he appeared immediately. He said, so I'm going to give him my money. Giving it away is one thing. Lending it and hoping that the person's going to pay you back is another. Nowadays, many people who have themselves extended, especially in private businesses, are reaching everywhere they can to borrow money for what they call bridge loans. Well, my friends, bridge loans, bridges have been collapsing. So here's a question you ask yourself. I had a dear friend who had a business, and he said, I need $25,000 to keep my business going. And I was going to gather it for him and try to find it to give it to him. And I realized something, that if I gave him this money, he was going to pay off interest on a loan. And he was going to be in the same spot, which he couldn't possibly get out of, ever. And I realized that I was doing a disservice And another woman I know whose son got fired because of the Madoff thing. He was one of the, he worked for one of the institutions, you know, the foundations. Good guy. He gets fired. And he thinks right away, well, Dad, give me a job or give me some money, family, because he doesn't want to deal with it. You see, this is not such a horror. Not having a job and being without a job gives you an opportunity to face yourself in a way that will develop a strength, a power, a source of something, not only for now, but for your future. It will help you challenge your relationship to take your relationship to a new level of love. Because if a relationship is based on how well you take care of me and that's all it is, this is the next hurdle.
Well, here's another positive thought, Armand, along those lines, and that is that you could put it this way. A crisis is a terrible thing to waste.
Use the crisis.
And that raises the question, will the warrior turn the crisis into an opportunity? I mean, the fact is you're fired or you're worried about losing your job. I mean, that's the reality. And we've spoken about many of the reactions, some of them negative and possibly destructive or taking risks that may be not a good idea. But how about taking some other kind of risk of using this opportunity, the warrior using this opportunity to try something new? When you reconsider things, maybe what you've been doing for a number of years is not really what you should be doing or what you really want to do. And as a matter of fact, as you read stories about crises and people who have faced crises, many of them say, and this is, of course, after the crisis, and this is in retrospect, they say, gee, you know, that was one of the best things that ever happened to me because it gave me an opportunity to shift gears, to change directions, and to become something else, that I got out of that rut of being attached to that image that I thought was me, and it turned out that was not me.
So that may be one opportunity, and of course there is the thing about it is a different economy. There was a time when you had a chance to easily switch and say, I'll switch my profession, but if you got to feed your kids, drive a taxi. You know what I mean? I mean, don't be ashamed of it. Now, this is another thing about finding pride. Let me talk about what I do in psychotherapy if I deal with somebody who's having a severe reaction to having lost their job. My job as therapist is not to do what the bartender does. The bartender says, that's all right, buddy. You're going to be fine. You're going to be wonderful. That's not my job. A psychotherapist's job is to heal, is to fix. Therapy means to fix. When you do it for physical therapy, you mean you got to get your body working better. Psychotherapy means to fix the mind, not just to keep it going. So if somebody comes to me who's in an extreme pain about having lost their job, I take them into the pain. I don't take them out of it. I say this pain that you have is not just the pain related to this job, but it's representative of other pain that you've felt in your life. And if you're having a severe reaction, I want to find the source. And the way I'll find the source is I'll take you into this pain. I'll invite you to drop through the bottom of it, to get into the hole of it. I'll tell you scream and cry and yell and feel it all the way down to your kishkes. And when we get down there, we get down to the bottom, you're going to uncover that you're going to find you feel just like you did when you were a child. And then from that child place, we'll correct it. From that place, we'll turn around and you'll stand up and you'll say, no, I won't take it anymore. No, I'm not worthless. That is corrective. That is psychotherapy. That's the idea. So the opportunity that comes up as a result of a deep emotional reaction to having gone through a trauma like this or any trauma is an opportunity to take it and go back to secure your being, like you say, Bernie, to unsheath the warrior by finding your power that's underneath your fear. I mean, fear is just you're trying to stay in one place.
Yes, that you are more than any particular job, any particular role, and that you have the power, call it the warrior, to move in many, many different directions. And sometimes we don't select that option until we do face a crisis, and somehow that opportunity is thrust in front of us if we see it as an opportunity. Let me relate a personal experience. A few years ago, I left a job at Brooklyn College, where I was a professor there for many years, and they were offering a lot of perks for leaving. This is not the same thing as getting fired or whatnot, but still, as we discussed before, even leaving a job or leaving a home or moving someplace is often very stressful. And I was very worried about this, and experienced a lot of anxiety around it. You know, boo-hoo, I was not going to be a professor any longer. But they were offering all kinds of things. I had gotten tired of the job. Frankly, it was kind of boring at the time. And I finally did it. And I still, for a few weeks, had this worry and anxiety about it. And I went to a workshop with a teacher. It happened to be a Tibetan person at we're very well known at Columbia University. And I've heard stories, and I'm sure you have, about people when they're in crisis and they go to hear a mentor or a teacher, and the person looked right at them and said something that spoke directly to them as if they were reading his mind. And I've always been kind of skeptical about that sort of thing. But I swear, this guy looked right at me, and he said, "When you die, you have to leave your job." You know, and on one level, it sounds kind of negative, but it really shook me up because it spoke to that kind of false sense of identity that we have.
That's really beautiful.
You know, he said, "When you die, you have to leave your job." And it shook me up, and it it was a moment of transition.
Well, you've always been a guy. I think, Bernie, you know, one of the things I've always loved about you, you've never stopped. Nothing's ever stopped you. You just keep on going. I mean, I don't know why the two of us, why aren't we on the golf course? Who wants a golf course? Life is too rich to be on the golf course. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'd like to take some of your calls. You know, next week, starting on Tuesday, we're going to be doing the fun drive here on WBAI. And we're going to have an erratic schedule. I'm on not Tuesday, but Wednesday from 1 to 3 p.m. Be sure to tune in. So it's going to be a strange schedule for February. You know, go to my website and you'll see the actual schedule of when I'll be on. So we're not going to have much opportunity for telephone calls, so I want to grab a couple. 212-209-2900 is our number. 212-209-2900. You can talk about anything you want. If it's related to the subject, I'd love it. But, you know, here we are for you, my friends. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. It'll take us a minute to get that call up there. 212-209-2900. I know we have a couple of people calling, and I know that he's a... You know, the one thing, Bernie, before we go there with the caller, burning your bridges. Just talk about that for a minute. One of the dangers that people have when they get fired is they get vengeance. They burn their bridges. They do things. They do negative things. If you lose your jobs, resist the temptation to get even on your way out by telling off your boss, telling off your coworkers, telling your secretary, don't kick the trash can, don't steal a stapler, don't do anything to mess up the computers, don't whine or pout or tell lies about somebody else to make yourself look better. Getting laid off tends to make people want to kind of move into this kind of revenge anger. And it's serious that there is a, you don't do anything, because what you do follows you around. Your immediate reaction could follow you around for a long, long time. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Skates.
Skates, how are you?
I'm doing fine today. How are you?
Good. It was so nice to see you yesterday.
I had such a good day. It was a beautiful day, and I thank you for the best birthday gift in the whole world.
It was your birthday? Yes. And Skates, can you tell people what DID is?
DID stands for dissociative identity disorder, and it is, and some people call it multiple personality disorders. And what it is that when the person suffers some very bad things that happen to them, and the body does something really amazing, the mind did something really amazing to save your wife so that you don't short-circuit your brain. This creates another memory drive. It's like if you have... So that you can disconnect from the pain while it's happening and you save your life. Sort of like if you're a computer, but you have all these different hard drives. And in the beginning, the hard drives are separate and the memory is not connected.
You know, Skates, I don't know if the audience knows it, but I've worked quite a bit with this in my life. And having met you, of course, it felt like a familiar meeting.
Yeah.
You know? And just a question for you. In the meeting we had, you brought Heidi along. I was wondering if I could also say hello to Heidi for a moment.
Yes.
Is that allowed?
Yes. Well, yes, I can do that today.
Please.
I just hope she doesn't get into any trouble, but okay, hold on 1 second, okay?
Sure. Bring me Heidi, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm waiting now. She's going to access this personality called Heidi, and Heidi I met yesterday also. Hello, Heidi.
Hi, Armand.
Hey there. It was nice to meet you also.
It was very nice to meet you. Very nice.
Yeah. When Skate says she hopes you don't get into any trouble, what is she afraid of?
Oh, wait, because my life is secret. You know, like this part of my life is something that most people that know me don't know about it. I keep it private because there's such a bad stigma with this particular disorder, and people are so frightened of it. They won't even give you a chance to really... Some people will not give you a chance to even explain that it's not a dangerous thing. It's this is actually an occurrence that happened, which was more of a blessing. Later on, it became a dysfunction. You almost rarely get to that part of the conversation. People
sure.
will abandon you.
Well, the United States of Tara, you know about the series that's on TV?
I heard of it. I haven't seen it, yes.
It's doing a fairly good job. I've looked at it. I've watched it. It's not disrespectful. It kind of shows what it's like when somebody shifts from personality to personality. And people should know that there's no acting in here. It's hard to believe. It's hard, you know, it's hard for everyone to see it. So I feel honored by your coming by. I feel honored by you being part of WBAI. I certainly want people to see your drawings.
I'd love to share it.
Those drawings are really wonderful. So I want to wish you a wonderful day and a happy birthday to you as well.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Can I get back?
You have a wonderful day.
You too. Can I get back to Skates for a moment?
Sure.
Hey, Skates.
Yeah.
That was okay, wasn't it?
Yes, it was very okay. And wouldn't it be nice if I could talk to those television show and I could see them? They would see a real person and then they could see what it's really like in real life.
I have a funny feeling, Skates, that they do.
They
have access. Yeah, they weren't presenting something that looked phony to me. It looked like they really knew people who did this. You know? Yeah. So I thank you very much for calling in, my dear friend.
Thank you for everything. Everything you do. And I support WBAI. It's very important. It's like a university education. And it's a blessing to everybody who taps into it.
Thank you. Thank you, Skates. Bye-bye for now. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hello there.
Hello.
Yes. Hi there.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi there.
Could you take your radio down?
Yeah. I'm
hello.
I'm turning... Okay, I'm turning it down. I just wanted to say something in three areas in terms of what you're talking about. I had a...
You know, I got your radio still on in the
turn
background.
Turn your radio down, please.
You've still got the radio on, and I know you usually are more sophisticated than that.
Okay.
There we go.
There's nothing on now.
Okay.
So my request is, I had a job at Touro College, and through certain circumstances, I'll be quick, the person, we had a little run-in with the director of the chairman of the department, and we decided to leave it go. I felt shame. I felt whatever. All of a sudden, 2 days ago, I got a telephone call. I had applied in another site. Sure enough, they had called me and reminded me that I was supposed to be there at a certain time. So immediately, they say, Gamzem Latov, it happened for the best in terms of what happened at that moment. So the shame went away, and it turned into be an awesome experience. That's number one. So I've got my... that I said that happened for the best. Yesterday I was crossing the street, and as with the light, and a car whisked by to me about a half an inch just before me, and there I was. I was still alive. So my request for Bernard, Dr. Bernard, and Armand is one. I found out that it was the best that I had lost this position. Number two, I almost wouldn't be speaking to you today. And number three, when you have losing job, when you've had almost losing your life, and you develop a sense of emun and betachem, trust and faith, what do you say about that?
I say thank you very much for calling in, Leora. I wish we could address that in 4 minutes, but you know, my more important thing is to take calls today, but I'll tell you this much. I think you're saying something about your courage and the way you approach life. And you've always been somebody who takes it, finds a balance, and doesn't get buried by situational stuff. You've always been a hero. So I want to thank you for calling in. I need to take another call, 212.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm Warren.
Hi there.
Hi, my name is Robert.
Hello, Robert.
Hi. I heard your conversation with Bernie, and
could you talk a little louder, please?
Yes. I really found the conversation very interesting, and I can associate with the part of the guilt and the shame in terms of work. You know, I'm a 36-year-old, and I've never been able to, feel satisfied at work. I've always found way to sabotage myself, even when I'm capable of doing the job. But I've never been able to keep a job all these years. I've always, end up going hopping from one job to another. And part of it, I'm always looking at the moment, whether I get fired or I leave the job, I always looking to blame something else besides myself. But when I dig deep into myself, I notice, there's this dissatisfaction, I don't know where I'm heading, what I want to do with my life, and it's like I need direction, I need focus.
Well, that's a good question. Do you need focus? That always seems to be the obvious way, That always seems to be the obvious thing for people who feel that they're scattered all over the place. I don't know if the answer is focus, because, everybody will tell you, do one thing, focus, just stick in one thing. But I think certain personalities, and I think certain personalities like yours, who have the ability to focus on many things at one time, may be in some way hurting themselves by trying to focus on one thing. You may need to find another way of reworking yourself so that you could be more involved with more things without having that single one goal out there of being an effective, wonderful, perfectly human functioning being like everybody else. I mean, maybe you're an artist, which I know you are. I know you are. I know you're talented. I know you're very creative. So maybe trying to fit yourself into the box like everybody else, maybe that's what's not working.
Well, and that's the other stuff, finding the problem, because usually we do define ourselves by what we do. And it does make me feel a lot of times like a failure, because it's like, people ask me, what do you do? And it's like, I've done so many things, and I've hopped from one job to the other, and it's like, you know, I've always, you know, found a way to sabotage myself at work, being fired, because eventually it's like I either get bored or I don't want to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the movie Office Space, where you just
I understand.
Feel like you're stuck in a box and you don't even know what you're doing with your life. It's like a feeling of meaninglessness, like you don't know what you're doing with your life.
Well, we're going to find a way. Each of us are going to find a way to do that. And this is a time that really helps people focus on the inside of themselves. I wish I had a better answer for you. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Bernard Starr. March 1st is a conference. Bernie, what's the email address? Do you know? I don't know. You'll send me an email and I'll send it to you. Go to my website and find it. This is, I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can go to thepositivemind.com to hear a rebroadcast of today's program.
Searching but not finding, understanding anywhere. Lost in a masquerade.
Masquerade, George Benson. Thank you very much, Armand Mill. Thank you very much.
Afraid to say we're just too far away from being close together, from what's the harm? We tried to talk. This lonely game we play. Hearts are weeping, disappear every time I see your eyes. No matter how hard I try. Understand the reasons that we carry on this way. Us in a man.